Welcome to the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, sitting tonight from our flagship radio station in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, AM 1380 WLRM Radio. We are also being broadcast tonight in Memphis by our newest affiliate station, AM 1600 WMQM, and of course, all of the AM and FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I tell you, we're just taking over the world. Happy Confederate History Month, by the way. It is Saturday, April 2nd. Confederate History Month is upon us once again. We will be covering issues of Confederate history and heritage throughout the month of April, doing our part online, on the air, I should say, to honor and commemorate the sons of the South. And that's something we have always done. That's something we will always do here on the Political Cesspool Radio Program. As a matter of fact, I was talking to you earlier. The interest in our work here continues to surge. Not only are we adding more listeners and more stations, interest online is just as robust at thepoliticalcesspool.org, our official website. Our web traffic has never been higher. I'm going to be covering for you during tonight's second hour many of the stories we have posted to our website in over the course of the last week to 10 days. But as I said, our traffic has never been higher. And as a matter of fact, if you Google Confederate History Month 2011, just Google Confederate History Month 2011, we are the number three website that comes back in the returns, placed even higher than the Sons of Confederate Veterans themselves. And of course, Google places websites very high if they are getting a lot of traffic on a particular issue. So listen, folks, I am excited about what's going on here. You know, unlike that which you might read about us on the internet by some left-wing attack groups, the people who actually listen to our show are as rabid as they have ever been for our message, and we are excited about that. We're going to give you what you want to hear tonight and every Saturday night in the Political Cesspool. And, of course, this month we are more excited than normal because it's Confederate History Month. Now, I'm getting a little anxious because we got a lot of ground to cover, but Keith Alexander sits in with me for the first hour each and every Saturday. And then he leaves the studio and goes home. He punches the clock for an hour, and that's it. You know, we don't want to give you an overload of Keith. It's just he gives you too much information. We got to let you decompress a little bit. But tonight, I was walking Keith out to the parking lot during the last commercial break, and he just started going into this great commentary. I was like, Keith, you know, as good as the first hour was, where was this 5 minutes ago? This is perfect for the radio. So long story short, I convinced Keith to stick around for one more segment. He's got something to say, and I said, don't tell me, Keith, tell the audience. And that's what he's doing now.
Thanks, James. Steve in Connecticut wrote a little missive here on our chat room saying that it was refreshing what he was getting over this program. Well, we said earlier that you're going to get insights and analysis at the cesspool that you're not going to get anywhere else. And that's what we were talking about in the parking lot. Here's what is happening. All of conservative talk radio is aware that America is in decline and that the decline is accelerating. But unlike every other outlet that we can think of, we cover not only all the normal topics that Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, even Michael Savage cover, we will cover the two taboo topics, race and Jewish power and influence, that will not be covered by other media outlets. For example, we haven't covered much about Jewish power and influence in this last, you know, hour about how the public and the private sector is succumbing to the deleterious effects of liberalism and the promotion of minorities in both sectors. But what happened is that basically you need to understand that the civil rights movement, that first of all, public sector unions and affirmative action, things like that, are the products of the civil rights movement. You know, the 64 Civil Rights Act is two enduring legacies are the EEOC and affirmative action. And also, we were talking about public sector unions. Public sector unions were basically a product of the civil rights movement, and black people were the primary beneficiaries of public sector unionization. That is indeed what the Memphis sanitation workers strike was about, that resulted, at least arguably, in the assassination of Martin Luther King. That was because they were moving into that area. And as Jesse Jackson, and there is also a little article in the Memphis Commercial Appeal yesterday about by Dennis Von Roeckel, the president of the NEA, National Education Association, making that link in great detail. Because of that, people need to understand that basically nothing would have happened without Jewish power and influence. Jewish power and influence was media control, money, wealth, and zeal. They brought it to the table. That's why the civil rights movement succeeded where it had failed before during the original Reconstruction, because there weren't a critical mass of Jews in America back in the 1870s. They started to come over in the second great wave of immigration from 1890 to 1920, and they were here firmly in place, firmly in control of the movie industry, the media, and academia by the 1950s, when the civil rights movement began. This is what has happened. This is, you know, the missing pieces of the puzzle that you're not going to get from Sean Hannity. You're not going to get it from Rush Limbaugh. You're not going to get it from Michael Savage. They're not going to tell you all of this. And without these pieces of the puzzle, you're not going to be able to figure out the puzzle, James.
And that is why I think the political cesspool has been able to separate itself and distance itself from all of these other carbon copy competitors. It's because we offer something fresh, we offer something different, and that's why we're fearless, of course, and we try to say everything in good taste. We certainly don't go out to offend, but we feel as though the truth needs an audience. That's right, and we try to be candid and frank about these issues, and the audience needs the truth, as Keith said, but that's why we've been able to make headlines around the world consistently. I'm not talking about, you know, a one-trick pony. We had 15 minutes. The headlines that the political cesspool makes and continues to make is something very, very special. And you don't do that unless there's something about you and something about your work that separates you from all other choices. It separates you from the pack. So we're excited about where we're going. We're excited about that which we've been able to do over the course of the last 7 years. And we're, of course, excited to be able to be carriers of a message that I think is right for all Americans and will certainly help us reclaim America's destiny. So, folks, that's why you listen to the Political Cesspool. That's why this program is continues to grow, continues to add new stations, continues to add listeners and affiliates, and our web traffic is soaring. We're excited about where this show is going. I got to shoo Keith Alexander here out of the studio with a broom. I'm shaking the man's hand. He is leaving for the night, everybody. Keith Alexander is leaving the building just like Elvis. And we're not that far from Graceland, so I don't know. But Keith Alexander is out for tonight. I'm not. Got a lot coming your way this hour. And then, of course, Sam Dixon coming up in the third hour tonight. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
I'm sitting here typing in the Council of Conservative Citizens chat room while I am speaking over the radio microphone, so it's a multitask, folks. It's tough to do, but welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. I want to thank Keith Alexander for punching a little overtime during the first segment of our second hour this evening. Of course, we are live, unrehearsed, and uncensored, and Keith Alexander's giving it to you tonight the way you want to hear it. The subtitle of my blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org that we update with a handful of different stories each day is race, politics, and hypocrisy in 21st century America. And, of course, we try to give you a little taste of that every night on the radio program every Saturday night, 3 hours. I told you last week what's going on out there today or this week in America and why is it important. I told you last week some of these stories may seem trivial, but there's always some interesting and important subplots. I told you last week while I was in Dallas broadcasting the show remotely about Dez Bryant, the Dallas Cowboys receiver who had a run-in with mall security because he didn't want to pull up his pants. This is a professional athlete making millions of dollars. He's getting in trouble. He's cutting in line. It's just a public menace. Won't pull up his pants. Parking in a fire lane. He's had continuous run-ins with Dallas cops. Well, last week, we find out that he is now being sued over a $250,000 debt for jewelry. The story reads that Bryant has been sued, this Dallas Cowboy football player has been sued by a jeweler who produced several custom items for Bryant in 2010. Per the complaint filed in Dallas District Court, A-plus Diamonds alleges that Bryant received $267,000 worth of jewelry that he has not paid for. His jewelry bill includes things like a $60,000 charm and a $23,000 bracelet. Obviously, no belt buckles were purchased. The story goes on, and he was also sued again recently, this time for a fellow who claims to have sold him $500,000 worth of jewelry. I don't know how one person is wearing all this jewelry. Another story claimed that he lost a $50,000 diamond earring on the field during a football game against the New York Giants last season. So, you know, these buffoons, this is, again, the third world mentality. Now, why is this important? We know facts have proven that 73% of professional football players are bankrupt within 2 years after their playing career ends. So, face value says, well, it's not important. A fool and his money will soon be parted. Dez Bryant, who cares? He's a low-level thug. He's just another, you know, professional athlete with no sense. The subplot of this story is a little more important, and that's because you have people with the Dez Bryant third world mentality as leaders of our cities, as we talked about in the first hour, people like Dez Bryant, people of that ilk, are the mayors of Memphis, Tennessee, and Atlanta, Georgia. People like Dez Bryant are being placed into prominent positions at financial institutions like Shanika, that we talked about in the first hour, embezzling $30,000 out of a bank. That's why stories like this are important. What else is going on today in diverse America? I asked the question on the blog this week, and as I said, folks, I don't mean to sound repetitive or like a broken record, but you got to check out what's going on at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Our traffic is through the roof. Maybe it's because we have begun adding pictures and illustrations and videos to complement each story there, but whatever the case, a lot of people are reading what we say, and they are loving what we say. That's the thing. People fundamentally agree with the message of this radio program. People love our work. We're growing. We're getting bigger. We're taking on the world, and we're making headlines while we do it. We talk about the news that is suppressed or otherwise hushed up by the so-called mainstream media. Black woman, this is the headline, chokes 71-year-old Walmart greeter while her pregnant daughter threatens to blow up the store. How much more diversity can America stand? This story was actually emailed to me by a young lady who loves our radio show. I want to thank Lauren, loyal listener out there. I believe she lives up in Ohio. But anyway, in today's episode of Adventures in Diverse America, we learned about two black women attacked the elderly greeters that meet you at Walmart, check your receipts when you leave. They attacked this 71-year-old man before threatening to blow up the store. This story reads as follows. A pregnant woman and her mother were both arrested after the mother allegedly choked 71-year-old Walmart greeter, and the daughter threatened to blow up the store Saturday, according to a police report. The pair went to leave. They got mad because they were there to get one of those prepaid credit cards. They were going to reload this credit card, and they were going to get a money order, but they were sent away for what reason, I don't know. The story doesn't provide that answer, but anyway, they got mad that it didn't work out the way they wanted. They went to leave, but then they were stopped by the greeter who, while doing his job, the 71-year-old man asked to see their receipt. The two black women said they didn't have it and yelled obscenities at the man, calling him a quote-unquote cracker. One of the black women pushed a shopping cart into the 71-year-old man, grabbed his throat, and began choking him. As employees broke up the fight, the other black woman there, the daughter, went to the customer service desk and threatened to punch the clerk in the face. She also said that when her boyfriend hears about this, the greeter, the 71-year-old white man, won't be alive. Then she yelled, "I'm going to blow up Walmart." I think they were arrested and faced some tiddlywink misdemeanor charge. But, this is, unfortunately, typical. It's typical. It happens every day. It happens so many times each day, stories like this. How do you pick which story to highlight? In any major city where you have a lot of so-called multiculturalism, stories like this are a dime a dozen. But I guarantee you, nowhere in the country last week did a white mother and her pregnant daughter choke and a 71-year-old Walmart greeter, threaten to blow up the store, so on and so forth. This is the third world mentality. And unfortunately, I believe it's a result of a genetic predisposition, and no amount of welfare and affirmative action is going to be able to change that. Another story, even more heinous in nature, took place in North Carolina. A white driver was nearly beaten to death by a black mob there. He accidentally hit a man who was involved in some sort of a gang fight. This person who was involved in the fight in a local trailer park ran out in the street at night and, of course, got hit accidentally. The driver pulled over, got out of the car, was attempting to call for help out of concern for this injured black man when he was attacked by a black mob sustaining very severe injuries. We have this story posted for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It took place in Henderson, North Carolina. I'm going to tell you what happened in this story when the Political Cesspool returns. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out
of this place. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking to you about the manifestations of diversity and how bad it is for America. Truly, diversity is not our greatest strength. It's our biggest weakness. Before I go on, I want to say this, and I mean it. We've said it before, but it bears repeating. Everything that we do on this program is motivated out of love that we have for our family, for our people. I don't wish ill will upon anyone. I want to see blacks and Hispanics and Jews. I wish that they would be part of the solution. I wish that they would, you know, get on the bandwagon with Western culture and be a part of the solution. I want to see them introduced to Christian salvation. I want them to be prosperous. I truly do, but I think, you know, until that miraculous day occurs, and we have no reason to believe that it ever will, that it should not be our burden to bring the rest of the world up to the standard of living given to us by our ancestors. I think that we need to be able to have a grown-up, adult, and intelligent conversation about separation for the benefit of all parties involved, certainly for the benefit of our family, which should be our first and foremost priority. Now, getting back to the story, and again, these stories are just so common, it hardly even causes you to raise an eyebrow anymore. But this story out of Henderson, North Carolina reads, and we have this, by the way, posted again at our website, complete with video documentation from a local television affiliate out there in Henderson, North Carolina. Got to check it out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But it reads, bystanders severely beat a driver who accidentally hit a man running from a mobile home park near Henderson where large fights broke out on Saturday night. This was last Saturday night, state troopers said. Troopers said the driver, who didn't want his name released out of concerns for his safety, was driving down a road to get his son a late-night snack from Burger King around 9:15 p.m. Several large fights were taking place in a nearby mobile home park, troopers said. Reuben Wright, a 19-year-old out of Henderson, ran out in the road in front of the car, and the driver had no time to see him stop. He hit this black man. Now, of course, the story itself doesn't mention the race of the victim and the thug, but when you watch the video on our website, you see and you know. Of course, here at the Political Cesspool, we see it as our duty to give you the rest of the facts, the basic facts that the other news agencies brush under the rug for obvious reasons, but continuing on, troopers said bystanders from both sides of the road rushed out into the street, dragged the white driver from his car, and nearly beat him to death. He is in the hospital. His lung is in danger of collapsing. A white lady who was also driving by, Cindy Harris, and you'll see her in this video, laid on her horn. She couldn't get out of the car or else the black mob would have nearly killed her or killed her. But she laid on the horn until other help came by, and apparently a pickup truck came by and grabbed this white guy and got him to the hospital. The lady who stopped says she thought they were going to kill him. It was a brutal beating, but she couldn't leave him. She didn't know what she could do to help. She, you know, kept honking, and she said that she laid on the horn of her car for 5 minutes until somebody came and helped this guy. And get this. Bruce Coleman, who was another one of the people in this mob of blacks, who was a friend of the black guy who got hit, said he didn't know the driver was injured. My attention was focused on Reuben, he said. So, okay, you got this black mob, the beating this guy nearly to death, and this liar says he didn't know that the driver was injured. He was focused on the guy that got hit by the car. Give me a break. Everyone involved in the mob was black, including the liar who said he didn't know who the driver was, that the driver was injured. You know, but stories like this, again, are a dime a dozen in contemporary America. That's just a fact. You know I'm telling the truth. It's not racist to tell the truth. I wish this didn't occur. I wish all of the people in this mob, and I wish that the people in that were threatening to blow up Walmart while they were choking this 71-year-old white man, I wish they were productive members of American society. I would wish nothing more. I want them to be successful. I want them to be part of the fabric, but it just, you know, like oil and water, it hasn't taken. You know, these folks have been in this country for as long as we have, and they are nothing like the founding stock. it can be left to debate why that is and why this phenomenon occurs, but it cannot be disputed that this is a fact. Again, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, check out the video, and you know, let me know your thoughts. And I encourage you to do that. Another video we've got up this week, and this got a lot of comments. It happened in Panama City, Florida. This is, of course, a little more trivial in nature compared to the other stories that I've just brought to your attention. But what's funny is that I've actually been to this Burger King in Panama City. I go down to Florida a lot. I love Florida. I had a lot of fun there. As I wrote on the website, just ask anyone who's ever been to Epcot with me about that. But here's what we got. And again, this came in. We got this hot news tip from one of the political cesspool fans out there, emailed me. We had to put this up. You got to go check this video out of a riot that happened at the Panama City Beach Burger King on Front Beach Road. If you've ever been down there, you'll know what Front Beach Road is. The main strip right there in front of the beach, hence the name. But you got this 30-year-old black woman. Why a 30-year-old black woman's on spring break to begin with is a good question. She has kids at home. Anyway, something happened there, and I don't know what, but pandemonium and bedlam broke out. They just tore up the Burger King, her and her friends. Of course, it was, you know, an all-minority crowd, quote-unquote. It was a diverse crowd. And they just tear up the store. They're attacking the employees. Again, what's sad is there's nothing remarkable at all about this story because it's just so common, but you got to go check it out. And as it turns out, this black woman gave police a fake ID, and even her fake ID had a rap sheet. And her rap sheet, her actual rap sheet, once the police sorted through it all and found out her true identity, was even more heinous than that of her fake ID. But you know, just lawlessness seems to follow certain ethnic groups wherever they go. And why do we want to be a part of that? I don't have a solution. I don't know what more we can do to help these people. I mean, you already give them preferential treatments when it comes to admission into college. You give them preferential treatment when it comes to hiring, affirmative action, welfare, set-asides, quotas. And their behavior is worse today than it was during the era during which they were so-called oppressed. The more you give them, the worse they get. And I don't think I'm being out of line in saying that. I don't think I'm being over the top in saying that. Just browse through your local newspaper any day of the week. You know, check out the rape statistics from the United States Department of Justice, from the FBI. Check out the crime statistics, murder. You know, there's a common denominator there. And if we're going to be serious, and if we're going to be adults, we need to address this. And we need to deal with it, and not with kid gloves, not like, you know, you deal with a spoiled brat by you know, giving them incentives, throwing more money at them, giving them more preferential treatment to absolve ourselves for sins we never committed. That's not the way you deal with it. You deal with it with you know, stern actions and measures. You quit apologizing and you deal with it harshly. Law enforcement should deal with, you know, these sorts of crimes harshly. You know, they should be apologizing to us for the way cities like Detroit look. We're going to talk about Detroit when we come back. Experts can't figure out why Detroit is dying. Houses in Detroit are selling for $100. If diversity is our greatest strength, the houses in Detroit should be selling for, you know, millions. Inflation should be rampant in Detroit because it's so diverse. America's becoming a third world country, and the media and our politicians are paralyzed to address the real issues. We address them here on the cesspool. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place.
devil's place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Hi, welcome back to the show. Good show tonight, as it always is here in the political cesspool, James Edwards with you tonight. If, listen, you know, we still got over an hour. And if I do say so myself, the highlight of tonight's show will be the third hour. As great as Keith Alexander always is, my loyal and faithful co-host, when Sam Dixon comes on tonight, folks, Sam is always excellent. He's coming up in the third hour, and I'll tell you more about that in just a second. But if you've not yet joined us, there's still time to join us tonight in the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party, the Political Cesspool Online Chat hosted by our partners, the Council of Conservative Citizens. Go there now, cofcc.org, cofcc.org, Council of Conservative Citizens. Join me in the chat room. I'm there right now chatting with Political Cesspool fans all over the world. Telling you before the break, experts, quote unquote, can't figure out why Detroit is dying. Well, I've given you several random examples of manifestations of diversity across America, and that's just stuff that's happened in the past week, and there were hundreds of more that I could have brought to your attention, and it happens every week. That's why Detroit's dying, because that's the kind of climate that has been fostered in Detroit as a result of so-called diversity and multiculturalism. Big article by the New York Times makes mention of the fact that Detroit has lost over 25% of its total population during the course of the past decade. That's historic. And it's always comical for me to read these so-called experts attempting to draw a conclusion for such a collapse. They'll conjure every hypothesis you could think of except the most obvious one of all. We know why Detroit's dying. I don't even have to say it. Crime and violence and squalor follow certain people wherever they go. You know, black people themselves don't even want to live in these areas. That's why they always want to come out to the so-called white flight areas. You know, Detroit is no different than Atlanta or Memphis or any other city that has a large minority population. People leave these cities because they don't want to, you know, get choked like the 71-year-old Walmart greeter. They don't want to get, you know, mobbed and beaten half to death like the guy in North Carolina who was just going to go get his son a hamburger from Burger King. You know, they don't want to be attacked like the workers at the fast food restaurant in Panama City. That's why Detroit is dying. People don't want to live around it. Why would you want to? And that includes, by the way, all of these guilty white liberals and talking heads on other radio and television shows, government officials. Look, you don't see them living in these neighborhoods, do you? Everyone, and I mean everyone, including those people, knows this is true. They don't have the guts to say it. I do. You can't have a first world nation with a third world population. Houses in Detroit are selling for $100. $100. That's the price of a nice dinner. You know, but, you know, if diversity and multiculturalism were so great, you know, why aren't people just flocking to take advantage of this opportunity? You can completely erase your mortgage and live around a lot of diversity for only $100, have a house for $100. Why aren't people flocking to take advantage of this? You know, I'd like to see all of these guilty white liberals who are paying through the nose to live in their segregated communities, in their gated communities. I'd like to see them lead by example and pony up the price of a dinner to purchase one of these $100 houses in Detroit. They'd get to live by all the multiculturalism they can stand until they, you know, get killed. You know, these are the folks that are always telling us that diversity is our greatest strength. Well, what are they waiting for? Surround yourself by minorities, erase your mortgage payments. What's not to love? You know, actions speak louder than words. You know, what are they doing? You know,
All right. Anyway, we talked last week. Actually, we made mention in passing about what's going on in Detroit, and we talked about Marin County, California. Now, this is a small area near San Francisco. Winston Smith brought it to our attention last week, political cesspool co-host Winston Smith. Interesting development, CNN reports, in Marin County, California. Turns out that Marin County is one of America's most desirable counties in which to live. It's also one of America's whitest counties. The media naturally refuses to acknowledge that 800-pound gorilla in the room and connect the obvious dots, but I'll do it for them. Marin County is desirable because it's nearly all white. It lacks diversity, plain and simple. Go check the video at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and you will hear CNN reporting that the Obama administration is now looking to forcibly integrate Marin County by claiming that they are somehow in violation of the so-called 1964 Civil Rights Act. Once again, our friends at the Council of Conservative Citizens, their intrepid webmaster Kyle Rogers, have also weighed in on the matter by writing this, that CNN admits that the whitest county in California is one of the most desirable places to live, not only in California, but the world. Then CNN goes on to declare that the county must be integrated and needs an influx of non-whites. The Obama administration has decreed that the county is in violation of the Civil Rights Act by not having more non-whites there. Now, the Obama administration wants California's whitest and nicest county to build low-income housing and recruit blacks and Latinos to move there. This is the exact same policy carried out by the Soviet Union after their conquest of Eastern Europe. Populations were forcibly moved to break up the ethnic homogeneity. I want to leave you with this as a parting shot for this hour before we transition into Confederate History Month. We're going to end up the show tonight focusing on that. But the following definition of genocide was provided by the United Nations General Assembly. Now, we're no fans of the United Nations, you know that. But they do offer a definition of genocide. And it reads as this: any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group as such is genocide. And they list five examples of how one would commit genocide. Number one, the outright killing of members of the group. Number two, this is where you need to pay attention, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of a group. Number three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction. Sound familiar? How about number four, imposing measures intended to prevent births within a group, and finally, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. You need to go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, check the blog entry, Marin County, California Lacks Racial Diversity, and read for yourselves the definition provided by the United Nations of what genocide is. And based upon that definition that I just provided for you, do you feel as though it could be argued that European Americans in this country are the victims of government-sanctioned genocide? Something for you to think about as we now transition into our salute tonight to Confederate History Month. It's something we do every year. And as I said at the very top of the show a couple of hours ago, we are very proud to be the only radio program in the country that actively promotes Confederate History Month. We do it every year, and we believe that it's applicable to our nationwide and indeed worldwide audience. And as we mentioned before, Confederate History Month is officially designated each year by state governments in the South for the purpose of recognizing and honoring the Confederate States of America. April is Confederate History Month because Confederate Memorial Day falls during that month in many of these states, such as Tennessee, where we are, and Texas, and many others. I love the fact that state governments still officially proclaim April to be Confederate History Month. And we're going to be talking with Sam Dixon tonight, author of Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. Hey, during this next commercial break, go check out thepoliticalcesspool.org. We've been adding videos. Check out some of the videos we've added at the top of the blog world pertaining to Confederate history. I tell you, you know, truly, I am an alpha male, a man's man. And reading about some of the gallant sacrifices, the valor of the Confederacy, hearing Dixie, watching some of these scenes from Gods and Generals, all-time great movie, puts a cold chill down my spine, you know, goosebumps. My eyes swell up with tears every single time. There's something spiritual about it, folks. Connection to your ancestors that fought and died for a cause that they believed in. What happened to the country that used to produce men like that? I am proud to be a Southerner. I am proud to be born as a direct descendant of a Confederate veteran. We're going to be talking about it or not, in the third hour. Stay tuned.
Third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.